Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with LearnVisualStudio.net. In this lesson, we're continuing our look at the various elements available in HTML5. In this lesson, we're going to focus on the heading content and sectioning content. A combination of these will provide structure to our web pages, or rather, they're ways of grouping content on our web page in a semantic manner. The previous lesson merely dealt with paragraphs and runs of text. However, there are larger structural elements in a typical web page that defines sections like the header, the navigation area, the footer, and of course the main area. You might be working through this and asking yourself, do I really need these? Do I really need to know all these HTML5 structural elements? And the truth is that we can create web pages without any of these structural elements that we're going to discuss in this lesson. However, a real HTML5 page will contain these because of the reasons that I mentioned a little bit earlier and in previous videos. Leaving them out means that our page is void of semantic structural meaning. These are important as far as HTML5 is concerned, so let's go ahead and dive into them. And we're going to start with heading content, specifically look at H1, H2, H3, and so on. So you can see I'm already starting here on the specification page. If you haven't already, please navigate to it and create a bookmark because we're going to keep coming back to this. And you'll recall from previous videos the technique we use is to hit Control F on our keyboard to bring up the find toolbar. And here I'm going to type in the H1 comma, and that'll get us close enough to this title called the H1, H2, H3, H4, H5, and H6 elements. So I'm going to right click and select open in new tab. And these heading elements define the headers of the various sections in our documents. So here we have a series of ranks. H1 is the highest rank and H6 would be the lowest rank. So for example, H1 would be the subject of a section. H2 would be subsections that belong to the H1 section, and so on. So you can think of a hierarchy or kind of an outline where you have up to 6 levels of hierarchy or indentation or whatever, what have you, okay? Actually, there's a way to get more than 6 levels with sectioning, but that's kind of an advanced concept and I don't want to talk about it right now. So these are the ways that you describe the various sections that we're going to define using sectioning content elements in just a bit. So I created a really quick example of this. Make sure you download the code from wherever you are currently watching this video or wherever you originally downloaded this video. There should be a zip file that has a folder called Lesson 06. If you open it up, there's just one file in it, and if you double click it, you can see an example of using an H1, H2, H3, H4, H5, and H6. We can look at the source for this file, and there's really nothing up my sleeve here. It's fairly simple and straightforward. I think it's interesting to note that by default there's a style sheet applied that makes the H1 a very large font and the H6 a very small font, and each of them in between are various degrees, okay? But again, you style this using cascading style sheets. You typically never just adopt the default style sheet if you're going for a highly stylized web design, all right? But at any rate, semantically, what we're indicating here is a number of ranks and a hierarchy for our content. Okay, so let me go ahead and close that down and get back into our web browser. So let's talk about sectioning content elements. We use these in lesson 2, and they're tags like the header. So let me start off by doing this. Let's the header element, and I'm just going to right-click and open that in a new tab. Then we're going to type in the footer element, and I'll right-click and open that in a new tab. And then also the nav element, and open that in a new tab. All right. So before I discuss what each of these are and why they're important, we need to know that they can be added in any order within our document. In fact, a footer can appear before the header because we're interested in the semantics, not necessarily the order of how these elements appear visually on the web page. If we take a look at the header element here on our page, we can see that the header element represents a group of introductory or navigational aids. So we used it in our example in lesson number 2 as the very topmost section of the web page, but it could be used in other sections on the page if we wanted to indicate that it will contain important information for that given section. So you might think of an example of a blog. You might have a web page that has multiple blog posts on it. It might contain each of those individual blog posts are contained in a section, and each individual blog post might have a title and author, how many likes it got, buttons to various social networks, and so on. So you might, in that case, have a couple of different headers. One header for each of the blog entries on that given page, and then another header section at the very top of the web page itself. Similarly, we can look at the footer element, and the footer element represents a footer for its nearest ancestor sectioning content or sectioning root element. A footer typically contains information about its section, such as who wrote it, the links related to related documents, copyright data, and the like. So in our example in lesson 2, we used it at the very bottom of the web page, but here again, going back to that blog example I spoke about just a few moments ago, you might have several blog posts on a single page, and you might have for each of the individual blog post sections, you might have a little footer with the date that it was written, the author, the pingback information, the ability to add comments, and so on. And then there's the nav element. And you can see it describes the nav element as represents a section of the page that links to other pages or to parts within the page, a section with navigation links. So we might typically think of the navigation in terms of a menu at the very top of each page of a website and possibly at the very bottom of every page as well. However, if you had links on the page that push the user deeper into the web page, kind of like we have here, with using named anchors and so forth as a form of bookmarks, or any sub-navigation on the page, you would use a nav tag to indicate that regardless of where it appears on the given page or whether it's in a header or footer or not. So we said that these tags, the header, the footer, the nav, can appear in any order. It's relative to their meaning within the given document. Furthermore, they can appear multiple times, again, if it makes sense semantically to do so. So, for example, a page that lists multiple blog posts is a good example of that, where we were able to use, or at least conceive of how we would use the header, the footer, and the nav multiple times on a single web page. But let's not worry about that too much. If we keep our pages simple, this really won't be an issue, at least not right away. So, but here we can begin to see the value of defining our markup in terms of semantics, so that a screen reader can skip the header, the footer, and the navigation areas and go directly to the main sections, like the articles on a given web page. So next up, let me shut all these down. Let's talk about the article element. And let's talk about the section element. All right, so let's start with the article element. Okay, so when we're thinking about article, we're not simply thinking about like a newspaper article. Instead, we're thinking about something that's a complete unit, a complete idea, something that can be syndicatable. And what do I mean by that? Well, take, for example, on an e-commerce website, you might have a number of products in a product catalog, a book, a shirt, a dishwasher, whatever the case might be. Each of those products might have a title, a description, an image, a price, and so on, right? And so if you publish these correctly in a way that's consumable by other websites, they can be syndicated on those websites. So for example, a search engine or another website that's like has an affiliate relationship with your website could take the entire definition that you created inside of the article designation, inside of the article specification, and then include it on their own website so that your products come up as items in the search engine, or could be included as in a comparison website. And so this gives a company another avenue through which to sell their products by merely structuring the content for each of their products using articles and making them syndicatable. Okay. The same could be said of a blog post, for that matter, or a news article, or sports scores, or anything that's a complete thought should be marked as an article so that it can be potentially syndicated by others if that is indeed your ultimate intent. Now, the sectioning element, as we see here, there we go, the section element has a different intent. You can see that the section element represents a generic section of a document or application. A section in this context is a thematic grouping of content, typically with a heading. All right, so it is generic in nature, but it generally represents smaller pieces of a larger component. So for example, while an article might be a big picture idea or thought, a series of sections could define individual parts of the article. Now, of course, this is relative. Conversely, a section could contain articles, if that semantically makes sense. Sections can contain other sections. So just like I said about the header, the footer, and the nav appearing multiple times in a document, the same is true with an article and a section. And this might sound crazy, but a section can contain articles that can contain sections, okay? And so at this point, I've created a couple little graphics to help smooth this over. This first image that you see on screen, it closely resembles the layout for the project that we worked on in lesson 02, where we have a section with a couple of articles inside of it. At the very top and bottom, we have a header and footer. Each have a nav section inside of it, okay? So that's a pretty straightforward, and we see how we have a section that contains articles. Let's look at an alternate version of this in a second image here. Our header and footer look exactly the same, but inside of our section in the main area, we have an article and then a second article that has some subsections defined inside of it. So in this case, we have a section that has an article that contains two sections. Okay, and then let's look at a third example here where we have a header and a footer by themselves, and then a nav section that's not part of the header or the footer. Inside of the main area, it's called the article, and the article has a header and a footer with two subsections inside of it. And there are literally probably no end to the combinations that we come up with. These are just some ideas to kind of illustrate the things that we've been talking about. So the real question at this point is, what is all this accomplishing? Well, it allows the scenario where each article is syndicated to multiple websites and you want to retain the semantic meaning of the headings and the paragraphs and so on. Now, the site compiling the articles might define a different styling, but it can use the entire section in its entirety, okay? A lot of time is spent on in the specification explaining some of these scenarios, and they're a bit on the advanced use cases, but all I'll say about it for now is that each section that you define essentially restarts the hierarchy of headings so that you can have more than six headers. So for a full understanding of the notion of outlines and how the sections reset the styles associated with the various headings, take a look in our document here at creating an outline and spend some time reading this over. You never see outlines, but it's just how web browsers are supposed to interpret the scenarios that I just described. And this might help you come to a better understanding of the relationship between sections and headings if you need those for a complex page structure. Okay, so moving on, let's take a look at the aside element. And this is another structural tag that has meaning. It's used to define any part of a document that doesn't belong directly in the paragraphs, but supplies some additional information. So it could be skipped over. It might define a marketing message, a pull quote, a did you know section like some books have, or what have you. And if you take a look at this example, you can see the use of the aside for a pull quote. Here we have a paragraph of text and another paragraph of text, and in the middle of it we have an aside defined. And in this case, the aside is merely used to draw the reader's attention deeper into the article, so to provide some visual interest to the article and highlight the most important quotes from the article. All right, so let's move on to the div element. And I mentioned the div element in the previous lesson, saying that it was the sectioning equivalent of the span element, in so much that it has no inherent semantic meaning. So take a look at how it describes this. The div element has no special meaning at all. It represents its children. It can be used with the class, lang, and title attributes to mark up semantics common to a group of consecutive elements. Authors are strongly encouraged to view the div element as an element of last resort, for when no other element is suitable. Use of more appropriate elements instead of the div element leads to better accessibility for readers and easier maintainability for authors. Alright, so we're saying this section of content defined inside of a div tag belongs together, but it really doesn't fall into any of the other semantic containers that we might have available to us in HTML5. Now, that should be rare. However, the div tag was abused in previous versions of HTML. In fact, somebody coined the phrase dividis for web pages that have dozens of div tags defined. The reason people use so many div tags was for page layout. The div provided a way to get some advanced layouts without having to resort to tables for page layout, which is another semantic no-no. However, in doing so, they merely replaced one bad habit with another. So, should you use the div element in HTML5? Well, the specification, as we just read, says that it's the sectioning container of last resort. But practically speaking, I expect we're still going to see a lot of the div tag, because even in the most careful designs, there will always be a trade-off between semantic purity and aesthetics. In other words, to achieve a beautiful page design with drop shadows and rounded corners, dramatic layouts with other neat features, the div tag will be employed as a box around which styling can be applied. So we're going to talk about this more when we get into CSS, but if you look at most web pages on the internet, each will contain many, many div tags, typically used for styling purposes. So that's kind of the practical nature of web development. Everybody agrees that something is a good idea or a bad idea. A bad idea because it doesn't adhere to a certain ideal, but to get the desired layout, compromises are sometimes made. Okay. All right, so finally, there's an element related to our heading content, but wasn't included as part of the heading or sectioning content model, and that is the H group. Let's take a look at that. So the H group, or the heading group element, represents the heading of a section. The element is used to group a set of H1 through H6 elements when the heading has multiple levels, such as subheadings, alternate titles, or taglines. So the heading group is a new tag that's meant to treat multiple heading tags as a single unit. Sometimes the H1 tag is used for a company name to be displayed besides the logo, and then the H2 is used or intended to be used as the byline or some type of phrase to describe what the company does. In these cases, you can group them all together to be represented as a single entity, not as a hierarchical elements the way that you normally use the H1 and the H2 and so on. And I have a good example of this. You can see here we have an H group where we have a perhaps an article or a book, and then so the book's official title, and then a byline or a secondary title, as you can see it described as here. Okay, so I think I covered most of the elements used for sectioning and heading purposes. I think conceptually the hard part is over. We'll merely add to the elements that we're going to cover for adding things like images and lists and tables and forms and so on. But I want to emphasize that what I talked about in the last two lessons, as well as this lesson, may seem like pretty heady stuff, but honestly, I wouldn't sweat it a whole lot. If you make a mistake and you use the wrong tag, chances are your pages are still going to look correct on most web browsers. The worst that can happen is that semantically, your page loses a little bit of value, a little bit of semantic meaning. We could have just ignored lessons 5 and 6 for the most part, but I think you missed the heart of HTML5 if you skip these new tags that have been added. You might ask, well, what's the purpose for all these tags? Well, hopefully we've been answering what the purpose for all these tags is all along, so that you get a strong sense of meaning and semantics whenever you're thinking of using HTML5. Okay, so like I said, I think the hard part's over. It's all downhill from here, just learning new tags. But hopefully firmly ensconced in your mind is that difference between the semantic meaning and its representation or its aesthetic representation within the web browser. Once you get past that hurdle, it's all pretty easy. Okay, so we're going to continue on the next lesson. We'll see you there. Thank you. Mm-hmm.